Since 2004, the Spaghetti Western Database has been the premier online resource for fans of the celebrated European movie genre. SWDB boasts a large collection of interviews, lists, film and home video reviews, images, and is updated daily to provide the most detailed information available. With a dedicated global community of contributors and powered by a lightning-fast, easy-to-navigate MediaWiki software, everything you want to know about Spaghetti Western cinema is right at your fingertips. Visit the SWDB today, located online at www.spaghetti-western.net.
You believe in Jesus?
Yes, I do.
Well, you're going to meet him.
You see what fun this is? It's going to get really exciting. I know what to do now. They've made it clear.
You warriors are good. Real good. The best.
This is the end of your rotten life, you motherfucking dope pusher.
We'd make one hell of a team, Snake.
The name's Plissken.
Welcome to another episode of 42nd Street Forever, the official podcast of Grindhouse Cinema Database. I'm Pete Roberts, and I'm here with Sebastian Hasselbeck, my original co-host. Hey, Seb, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good. And so today's film is going to be Brutal Justice, and that was playing at the Selwyn in July of 1978. And I just want to give a little information about the Selwyn Theater itself. That was what was then the Selwyn. Was located at 229 West 42nd Street, and the theater opened on October 2nd, 1918, with a Jane Kyle play called Information Please. And to fill in between live shows, silent movies were occasionally programmed. Then in May 1921, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, a film adaptation of the Mark Twain novel, was screened. In 1934, the format switched to movies and remained that way for the rest of the 20th century. The Selwyn was restored and renovated in the late 1990s as part of the Times Square redevelopment project and became the new home for the Live Theater and the Roundabout Theater Company, which opened on July 27, 2000 with a production of The Man Who Came to Dinner, starring Nathan Lane. The same year, the theater was renamed the American Airlines Theater after that company bought the naming rights. So now it's known as the American Airlines Theater. But in July 1978 at the Selwyn, the film that was playing was Brutal Justice. And we know that film as The Tough Ones. It went by a bunch of different names, like, you know, when it was released over here. It also went by Assault with a Deadly Weapon, which was like a re-edited version. And and the original title was Roma a Mano Armata, which translates to Rome at Gunpoint.
Yeah, they also called it Rome Armed to the Teeth, which is close original, but not quite. That's also a pretty wild title.
Right. And in America, it was distributed by Aquarius Releasing, which was owned and operated by Terry Levine. And actually, Aquarius was located in the Selwyn Theater, which I didn't really know that, like, until I did a little, you know, research on it. So that was kind of a cool little thing. So he would book those movies that he was going to, you know, distribute right into that theater itself.
My parents owned and operated a small circuit of theaters upstate New York, which consisted of drive-ins and also conventionals, regular theaters. And I started in exhibition when I was very, very young by virtue of my parents' position in exhibition. I was no unfortunate that arrived in this business. I came from upper middle class family, and they were property owners and theater owners. So breaking into the business wasn't difficult for me. Also, my mother's brother was the president of United Artists, and there was some degree of relationship there. And it was by virtue of that relationship there that when he went to Fox, which was back in the 60s, I also went to 20th Century Fox back in the 60s, and held important sales positions there for a few short years, where I basically learned the business of what I consider major league distribution, to include advertising, so on and so forth. And then when I left Fox, I was offered a position with Disney, an important sales position with Disney, but I'd had enough of the corporate thing, and I decided that I wanted to go back into the business, which I was familiar with, which was exhibition, plus the fact set up a distribution, an independent distribution operation, because we controlled a number of theaters, which would make me, by virtue of this small circuit, attractive to guys who were independent producers, whose motion pictures went out not via the regular normal studio system, but also were at a level whereby they were looking for a drive-in audience and a guerrilla-type audience, a redneck audience to a certain extent. So we had theaters in those areas, so that made us attracted to them. So that's how I sort of segued from being raised in exhibition to independent distribution. I would acquire feature films, doctor them up, and things of this nature, and from an economic point of view, we found out that, you know, you could buy representatively inexpensive, fine, well-produced, action-oriented films from Italy, Japan, and a few other countries, and all it would take to do was the Americanization of these pictures. I would visit Italy once a year, or maybe a couple of times in an 18-month period, and acquire these films. Having a practice of always paying our bills on time and meeting our commitments, and thereby developing a reputation as a company that said it would do something and subsequently did it, we were valuable to independent producers who would visit us in the United States to tell us about their future plans, or I'd have people over there who would tell me about this particular picture has been done, that particular picture has been done, and it can be acquired. And while over there, I met producers that specialized in guerrilla and gore and action pictures. They knew that we also controlled 42nd Street theaters to a certain extent, so we were valuable to them. And we acquired the picture, frankly speaking, for about $35,000. And I think I had to put about another $10,000 into the picture. And I think it shows us somewhere in the air about $700,000 profit thus far. So, as you can tell, with that extraordinary return on investment, that was excellent for us. And we did that, I would say, several dozen times over the course of 25, 30 years. Creating titles. I never acquired these pictures with the idea in mind they should only play a few select theaters. I was always looking to sort of utilize my relationships with the major circuits that existed at that particular time, especially companies like RKO and Stanley Warner and United Artists. I enjoyed great relationships there for 35, 40 years. So if I would go out and see their film buyers there, many times I would screen the picture to them. They knew that we were capable of putting on a solid campaign, so they wouldn't be embarrassed there. They would have weak periods in their exhibition schedule, and they were happy to have a picture from Terry Levine or people like Terry Levine that was being supported with a good representative campaign that could gross representatively well, and they could not quite pay off in the dark, but just a few points above that.
The patient's scream disturbing me. Performed removal of vocal cords.
His name is Dr. Butcher, MD, medical deviate. He has perverted the science of medicine for his own maniacal means. Dr. Butcher, MD, medical deviate.
So we needed a title like Dr. Butcher. And Dr. Butcher, against that advertising, tells you what this is all about. And then if you get a flatbed truck and you put operating tables on it, and you have pretty nurses in flimsy attire, and crazy young men running around with stethoscopes, and you park it outside of the National Theater on Broadway, until the police demand that you take it away and then you drive it around a block and repark it again, it can guarantee to bring you a gross at that National Theatre of $62,000 for that particular week while playing it less than three blocks away at our Lyric Theatre on 42nd Street for another 60 grand. So the game was very good in those days, and that's the reason for creating titles that are marketable, that do not cause the public to have to think, hey, what's going on here with this? You touch their live wire immediately.
Make them die slowly.
Cannibal Ferox might be great for the producers, or it might mean significantly more in the Italian language, but what does Ferox mean over here? Is that some form of soda that you might use in baking or something? Make them die slowly. Okay, they did die slowly in the picture. The picture dealt with archaeologists going into some quasi-jungle someplace like that and being captured by the primordial people who lived in the jungle, and being subjected to decapitations, castrations, and all manner of other horrifying indignities.
And when you get caught in this jungle, there's no bail and no jail. There's just punishment and pain. Cruel, barbaric, primitive. For what they've done, make them die slowly.
And that's the way I would sit down and work out some titles and taglines and put them aside for about 20 minutes, then go back and edit them. And over a couple of days, I had the complete characteristics of the campaign set out, give it to our art department, and they would take it from there. Inherent in the picture was all of these great slides, which enabled you to blow up into huge life-size stands and things. So you had the raw, gross material. You didn't have to do crummy line drawings and things of that nature, or pay for some crackpot artist to come up with something. It was already in the picture, so it was available to you. So you'd be foolish not to take advantage of that. So what we would do, we would cut out 50 particular slides from the picture and blow them up, get stuff that wasn't blurry or anything, and build fronts with these things. And we would have the graphics, the horrifying graphics for the picture, basically in panels of 4 feet by 4 feet, which you could dress an outside of a theater quite well with. They're pretty accomplished filmmakers. A number of the champions of the sport, names basically escape me, great names, Dario Argento and a couple of other guys from there could turn out these pictures rather rapidly and quickly. And also, they made them because they recognized the appeal that they had for the non-English speaking areas. To the Japans, the Koreas, and they were selling to these territories. They are accomplished filmmakers as well as accomplished film distributors. They're very good at advertising, and they simply make inexpensive quality pictures. And they can make a scummy production, something that looks creepy. Herschel Gordon made a lot of pictures. And all of his pictures had that same, you know, home picture movie or home movies USA look. But you can see pictures coming from Italy, or used to be able to see pictures coming from Italy, that would really have some quality to them, that if somebody told you that they were made by an American studio or an English studio, you would believe them.
And he knew all the owners and operators on the 42nd Street, and he could, like, you know, get those his own movies from Aquarius played in all the different theaters. So you could go see, like, you'd go see Brutal Justice at the Cell in one week, and then the next week it would be, like, you know, at the Lyric or something like that, or one of those other theaters. So that was just a kind of a cool bit of information I learned. Umberto Lenzi directed the film, and we know him from, you know, he was sort of like a journeyman filmmaker. He went all over the place. He did like Peplum, he did spy films, spaghetti westerns, macaroni combat, giallo, horror and cannibal films and all that stuff.
And but the Police is not, that's probably not the one that he's most remembered. Like if you were to bring up his name, people would probably think of the, you know,
cannibal movies or something.
Cannibal movies, kind of,
Cannibal Ferox or something like that. But he did do a few, like, you know, I think he did several, like, you know, Polizios, but, you know, he was all over the map. Like he did everything, but we are going to talk a little bit about Polizios themselves and like how, like kind of like where that started. Like that was like the early 70s pretty much. And those sort of took over from the spaghetti westerns, which were like kind of in decline by that time, right? Is that you're the spaghetti western database chief, so you know that type of history.
Yeah, and I would go even further. Like, not only did they assume that position or that dominance, the position as the dominant genre that the spaghetti western had, but it also evolved similarly to the spaghetti western, which on its way out started self-parodying itself.
Right.
And the polizio, or the, let's say the Italian crime genre more generally, it went through that same development where towards the end of the 70s it was more on like the goofier end, because they ran out of ideas, and there was right. just a limit to how far you could take it in terms of violence and whatever. Right. So at some point
I did the same thing then.
It started being like just goofy comedies or genre crossovers and stuff like that. But they were super, super successful still. Yeah. Like the Nico Giraldi ones with Thomas Milian, which started semi-serious but were mostly goofballs. They were the most successful movies Milian ever did.
It reminds me of like Terrence Hill's movies, like when he went into, you know, the comedic, like, you know, right. the Trinity movies. It's sort of like the same thing in a way. It's like, you know, when you look at those, it's like a
similar. And we looked down on those, but those were the Terrence Hill, Bud Spencer crime comedy flicks. They were actually the commercially most successful, and they were actually the ones they made in the US. They were ones that they shot in Miami and wherever.
And you can understand
that's how successful they were actually.
Right. And you can understand why, because like, say if you're going to see like a super violent, you know, like that's not for everybody. You're not going to bring like some, like you go on a date, maybe your girlfriend doesn't want to see like some super violent, you know, like people getting beat up, women getting, but if you go to see like kind of like a fun, you know, goofy comedy, like everybody can kind of get into that. It's just like, I guess that's just the way everything is, every type of movie is, even,
but
over
they,
you know,
started as you mentioned, they started in the early 70s, and I want to say, I mean, I think on the historians don't really agree whether they were an actual ripoff or whatever of American movies like Bullet or French Connection, but there's certainly that influence there, and the decades they overlapped. So one theory is that it started as an inspiration or a ripoff of these American movies, and, you know, Dirty Harry especially. But at the same time, I think a lot of people overlook this, that it's a super, super distinctly Italian genre, because in the 70s, Italy was like experiencing a wave of crime. They were called the years of lead,
right?
And so this was not like the spaghetti western, something completely made up in terms of, you know,
it was reflecting and, like, what was really happening.
Exactly. It wasn't just escapism, it was actually a reflection of what was happening outside, and that's what
Which
made
it
very, very
it more
tangible.
That's a good point.
And that's also because Italians were, of course, super fed up with crime, so they liked the cop that was tough on crime.
And I was like, I was thinking about, like, when I was watching, like, you know, the Tough Ones or Brutal Justice, as it was released in on the Deuce. But I was thinking about, like, you know, how the difference between Dirty Harry and you know, Inspector Tanzi, who's played by Maurizio Merli, like, you can see like the difference, like in Dirty Harry. So like, he's basically just walking around, like, and he has one, you know, one killer to like take care of. And he's not like really even doing anything like that wild. I mean, he's like maybe shooting someone, you know, that's robbing a bank or something, but you know, Inspector Tanzi, like, he basically just goes around and like beats the crap out of everybody. Like, he just walks into a place and just beats everyone up and kicks them in the nuts. And like, it's just so like everything. That's the difference between the American and the Italian films. Everything's bigger and bolder. Like, you know, they do everything's like exaggerated, which is, I think that's why we like them partly, is because of that. You know what I mean?
It's, yeah. And they had kind of,
you don't
of,
get in the other movies.
Yeah, and they were like a big Four Seasons pizza, whatever. They had the car chases, they had the rogue cop, they had the ruthless gangsters, the hoodlums on scooters, the right. innocent bystanders getting killed.
Right, they had always the, had like the, you know.
The corrupt politicians and the bureaucracy that ties.
Yeah, there was
the
way more stuff going on. Like
yeah,
was,
yeah.
And like it wasn't like in the in the Tough Ones or Brutal Justice. Like it's not just like one guy he's after. It's basically like the whole city is overrun with like all these different like gangs and like you know rapists and stuff. So like makes it was just a different type of thing. It's like everything is like pushed further like in this.
Yeah, and my theory is that now we look back and know how popular that genre is, but when they made them, they didn't know. And each of these movies they made might have been the last one. So right. they just shoved everything in there as they could.
Like, because they didn't know if they were going to make anymore or something.
Yeah, because you know now we look back and we see a pattern or a recipe, but they were,
right.
they were during that time, they were still figuring out what the recipe was. So
they were just like kind of trial and error. They were trying all different stuff. Like they were saying, okay, right. let's take a little bit from The Godfather, a little bit from Serpico, a little bit from, you know,
yeah.
whatever, and, Mean Streets or whatever was exactly. popular at that time.
And as Mike Malloy says in one of those little features on one of the recent Radiance releases, he says there were like more or less three different kinds of Italian crime genres. And when the 70s started, it wasn't really clear which one would be the dominant one, the more the highbrow mafia movie or the Dirty Harry clone or the, I don't know, comedy. I forget which right. which three.
Did he say that which one was like the most popular, like in the end, was it the comedy ones or was it like
I think in the end it's the police, it was like this one that
like the real like you know because it and it's like also a thing where there was like different levels of like you know there was one the first ones that came out that were a little bit more subdued and then like as like they got more into the 70s they seemed to get like rougher and more like violent and stuff like and there was just like if you can you notice like how they changed a little bit like or maybe it's like the mafia ones versus the police ones. Remember the ones with Franco Nero? They weren't yeah. so like
yeah,
like they weren't like as violent as the other ones like the
and you would probably not ones. Really yeah. you'd probably not really toss them into the Polizio bucket yeah. really because yeah. they were like they you know took place in Sicily. They were more about the mafia. They were not about cops versus you know yeah. the gangsters so much. And you know right. Damiani, that was
yeah
now he's
like, more political stuff like right more
political more yeah. artsy and now he's being reappreciated yeah. as one of the most established or distinguished directors of the time. But of course yeah. back then, and that's kind of what Mike's point was back yeah. then, it was not clear which one would be the one that would yeah. dominate the box office.
I would predict that it would be like the Dirty Harry type ones, like to Live Like a Cop, Die Like a Man, like the ones where the guys are just like going right off the, you know, they're just, you know, doing whatever they want to get back at like the bad guys and stuff, that type of thing. That's what I would think would be the most popular with like the young people, because it's just like, wow, this is like crazy. They can just, you know, go off, like do whatever they want to do.
Yeah, and while the mafia was of course a problem back then, it's the mafia is not something that you would see every day. That's like, the mafia yeah. is something more invisible, whereas you know right. Kids on scooters and machine guns shooting up newsstands, that was something yeah. that people would actually see out on the streets.
But like you were
that's
saying,
why
like
they were longing for yeah. the cop that was yeah. you know tough on crime.
Right, like you were saying, like you know since that stuff was actually really happening in real life, it became like a cathartic thing for the audience to go see like the you know these guys fighting fire with fire, like you know like Inspector mm-hmm. Tansy, like he's not taking any crap, he's like just going in like you know just taking out all the bad guys in any way he can do it and that type of thing.
Yeah, and here we see a trait that's I think as you mentioned that's a trait that we see in a lot of these policiers is the cop right. that needs to bend the rules because you know he's being held back. And you see these lines over and over, whether it's Maurizio Merli or Franco Nero. They're like there's always a scene in there where they're talking to the police commissioner and it's why do we have to obey all the
take
rules
this stuff.
The cops don't yeah. and how yeah. are we supposed to deal with all the crime if we have to stick to all the bureaucracy
right. and it's like Dirty Harry thing. Like the Dirty Harry thing
yeah like, or at least Dirty Harry in the beginning beginning, because Dirty Harry faced like a super backlash about supposedly being, you know, very fascist, like, and whatever. And but you know, they had similar problems. I'm pretty sure that back in the 70s, there was like the Italian media were like accusing the movies of fostering the violence. I'm pretty sure that might have been.
They were blaming the movies.
Yeah, I mean. Because it's a self-reinforcing effect, maybe. I mean, these were not documentaries. These were movies after all. So did they make the audience believe that the situation out there is even worse than it was really? I don't know.
But, and I was also going to bring up Maurizio Merli himself and how he was like sort of like a second string Franco Nero, because Franco Nero kind of started kicked off the genre with those movies he did with Enzo Castellari. And then and then Maurizio Merli came in, and he was basically the icon of the whole genre, right? Based pretty much, he was like the Clint Eastwood of like the Polizio's movies, I think.
And interestingly enough, I mean, he had a super cool mustache going for himself, but also he did a few, but he didn't do a lot. I mean, if you look at
it, that was like his genre.
It was a short-lived career, actually, I would say.
He did, but I mean, that's basically all he did was just Polizio's, right? I mean, he did like, I think, didn't he do like a Manaha, that the spaghetti western? He did that one.
Yeah, he did one, maybe two spaghetti westerns. Yeah,
but I mean, that was pretty much his genre, was the Polizio's, and he kind of like just became like the guy known for those. And I guess they say that he wasn't like the best actor. I mean, he was a good, decent actor, but like he was more of like, he was doing it. He was great at stunts. So like he would be the guy that they go to like do all his own stunts and stuff. And you can see some of that in the Tough Ones. Like when he's, you know,
he was the right guy for the job.
Yeah. He was like, you know, he would do all that type of stuff. So
he was like the cliche tough cop that the Italians probably imagined, you know,
right.
He had a big gun. Yeah. He wore a mustache. Didn't give a shit. And he wasn't like super athletic, but also he wasn't like the coffee and donuts type of cop either.
Right. He wasn't like, you know, overweight or something, but
of course the mustache is legendary.
Yeah, that's like his
there's only a one or two where he doesn't have a mustache. I think one is Highway Racer. But for the most part, I think it's the one with the ones with the mustache. These are the ones that are the good ones.
That's right. And what was the other Thomas Milian is the other star of the movie, and he was like, He really came from, he's kind of started out in like art movies, like more art house type movies, but then he moved into genre films, and like he was in a lot of spaghetti westerns, as we know, a lot of our favorites actually. He was in like Companeros, and he was in Run Man Run, and also one of my favorites, The Big Gun Down. That's one of my most favorite spaghetti westerns. And he was so good. He was so colorful, and so he's like, you know, just one of those actors. He was just so like bold and perfect of like that era, like of those guys.
And just as well, I mean, he came to fame with the spaghetti western, but it was the cop movies, and especially the later ones, the funny ones.
Yeah,
I think he made 20 or so where he played this.
I don't know if it was the Hunchback.
Later,
like his brother or something. I don't know. I can't remember.
Yeah, he played the Hunchback in this one, but then he got famous playing the cop in blue jeans or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wearing a beanie, lots of mascara. And,
he was very much inspired by like Serpico, Al Pacino, and Serpico. I guess that's one of his main like touchstones of his like work was him. Yeah. But
and that's what made him super famous. You can see talk show appearances of him in the 70s in Italy.
Oh, really?
And he's like he was the big deal then. He was like the 70s Italian version of
like Robert De Niro or something, or like Al Pacino.
Yeah, if Robert De Niro made just 20 comedies back to back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he was just that type of like character. And then later on, he was in several movies. Like I think like I saw him in movies and I didn't even know it was him because he just didn't look the same. Like he was one of those actors who would like change his appearance all the time. Like he was in Traffic, Steven Soderbergh's Traffic. I don't even think I knew who he was back then when I first saw that one. But he was
active until
all types of stuff,
until like the early 2000s. He was actually in one of those, if you remember, BMW made a bunch of short movies with what's his name?
I don't know.
One of those shorts, he was the passenger. They're always about a BMW, obviously.
I don't know if I saw those. Maybe you guys saw those more over there or something. I don't know.
I think they were just, I saw them online somewhere. I think you got those if you bought a BMW or something. I don't know.
Right.
They're with, what's his name?
Some director, you're saying? Like a director that did it?
It's always the same actor. It's the one from Children of Men. Not Children of Men.
Clive
not
Owen. Children
of... Clive Owen, exactly. Yeah, Clive he's Owen, he's yeah. always the driver, but it's different
really?
Directors.
I don't think I saw any of those, but that's kind of interesting. But he was like, what's his, Thomas Milian was in those?
Yeah, he wasn't one of those playing the passenger, so to speak. And Clive Owen always plays the driver. But anyway, cool. And so yeah, he was active until the 2000s or so. And oh. I forget when he passed away, 2006 or something.
Yeah, I can't remember. But I watched an interview with him on the
legend.
Yeah, I watched an interview with him on the Blu-ray of, you know, the Tough Ones, and it was just really interesting to hear about his, like, you know, life growing up in Cuba and like how he came over to America first, and he was trying to get into the actor's studio and then all that. That was really interesting stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Italy and, was he method? I don't know, but he was.
Yeah, he was kind of like he was kind of studying that type of stuff, method acting, and like, you know, I don't know how much he, you know. I think he probably developed his own style after a while, but like, you know, I think when he first started, he kind of did some of that, like, you know, Marlon Brando type stuff. And then, you know, like you have to live the role to, you know, to know what it is and that type of thing. But I think probably later on, he probably developed his own style and like, you know, I don't know, like say, who knows how he did Moretto, the Hunchback, like, you know, what did he do to like, you know, get into that role? Mm-hmm. He had the Hunchback. Maybe he learned how to like, you know, what it's like mm-hmm. to be handicapped or something or whatever. You know, I don't
he's
know.
Not just one random yeah. hunchback. He's like you can't hunch more.
The legendary Hunchback. I mean, that was such a cool like character for him in this movie. I mean, it was just so like he. And the thing about this, the thing about his role in this movie, he's really not in a ton of the movie. I mean, he's in it, mm-hmm. but it's like he's like, you know, like there'll be big, huge, like, you know, big, huge, like, time frames where he just won't be in the movie, but then like when he is in the movie, he just completely like owns the scenes he does, you know what I mean? He's just so
that's
like
true.
Magnetic and stuff, the way he appears and like, you know, he's talking and stuff and making jokes or whatever, you know, he's just like, you know, it just shows how what a great actor he was, I guess.
Yeah, and then later ones he gets even more eccentric and he's loud and he screams and he chokes around.
Right.
I think a lot of the stuff just gets lost in translation, but also I think his performances are always super funny.
Right,
and
he's always doing his own thing, like, you know what I mean? Like against the other people who are trying to, like, they're kind of playing it straight and he's kind of like doing his own, like, you know, crazy, unique character on the side.
Even if he's playing like serious roles, I think he's always throwing so much jokes in there that unless you understand Italian, you probably you just wouldn't notice probably. That would be like a Jim Carrey playing a serious role.
Yeah.
It would probably still be funny.
Right. But if you're of that culture, you know, like, you know, it strikes you in a certain way. Like we're us, we're like, what? We don't know, like, no, get it completely. But I guess over in Italy, like when he would do those like rhymes, like you would say, like, you know, Theodore, son of a whore, or whatever he was saying, like, you know, like that was like a really popular, all the whole place would like, you know, go wild because he was like making that those types of jokes that became like a running thing, like that he would do in each movie or something. Making,
yeah, and
like,
probably
you know, poems like.
And now at least we have the luxury of usually getting fairly accurate subtitle translations on Blu-rays.
Oh, yeah.
But back in the day, either you had a lousy English dub or nothing.
The translation was weird, like off or something, like didn't really.
Yeah, because it was more of an adaptation than a translation for the most part. And anything that was like specific or culturally specific to Italian was just replaced with something else that.
It was like some other word that was like similar, but not exactly like spot on thing. Because I was even watching the movie with subtitles on this on the Blu-ray, and it was like it wasn't exactly what they were saying. It was like some of the words were like off, or you know what I mean? Like the actual, the intention of what they were trying to say, like wasn't exactly what was the words were, or like, you know, vice versa, that type of thing.
Like, so here's a trivia. I'm not sure if all our listeners are aware of this. So all the Italian movies back in the day, of course, they were filmed without sound and then dubbed for each of the markets.
Yeah.
But there's another place that was pretty big in terms of European crime movies, and that was France. And in France, it went completely different. In France, all the crime flicks with like Jean-Paul Belmondo or whatever, what they did is they filmed everything twice, once in English, once in French. And that's why French crime movies of the 60s and 70s, if you watch the two different versions, they're actually not the same movie with different audio tracks. They're two. They might actually be two different versions of the movie. The difference might be very subtle,
weird.
But it's because they just filmed it twice. And
What was the other, what was the point of filming the second time? Like, so they did one French version. What was the other version for? Like,
English. English.
Oh, I see. So like, they would actually talk
English. English. Yeah. So it was not just read up, but they actually filmed it in
English. Just do like the scene differently or something. They do different, the scenes.
They
all
just do, basically they would do two takes. And once everybody spoke English on the second take, everybody spoke French. And
so it'd be slightly different, like, or something.
Yeah, it was just slightly different.
That is so weird. I didn't know that. That's
sometimes they would also probably recut the movie a little bit because, you know, that's what happened.
Right. They'd change the story or something a little bit. Or they edited that story.
Two interesting different. It's just an interesting difference in how the production system of the two countries differed back in those days. It's a radically different approach to doing it, but I guess, I mean, I'm not sure which one was economically more feasible.
More viable, yeah, I don't know.
On the plus side is that the French ones, then obviously, if you watch them in English, the lip sync would work better because
because it would be more spot on because they did it spot on. Obviously.
And one example that I know that I'm aware of is it's called, I think, The Coup. It's with Jean-Paul Belmondo and a few others.
I haven't seen that one, but
it's a heist movie, and you can get it on a Blu-ray, and there are two versions on it, and you won't notice the difference probably unless somebody told you, watch in minute 60 where they do
crazy.
This and that.
That's awesome.
But,
cool trivia.
Yeah, that's where I heard of this for the first time. And
right. That's really
cool. So if you're talking about Eurocrime, there's not just the Italian crime movies, but there's also crime movies in other countries. And most notably, France was the biggest, with Belmondo, obviously, and being kind of the French equivalent to Merlin, more or less.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's really interesting. That's awesome to find out that out. But would you want to go into the movie itself now, or?
I think we could let's go into the movie, and then at the end we can give a few more of our recommendations of for those who are just getting started with Eurocrime, what could be watched next. I have a few
few favorites. I have some favorites too, so I can just kind of just go off the top of my head like on those, but Brutal Justice, or the tough, we know it as The Tough Ones. I'm using the actual Grindhouse title that was playing at this theater in 1978. But this is, I just saw this like probably whenever it just came out on Blu-ray a couple of years ago, I think, whatever it was. I don't remember exactly what year it was, but from Grindhouse releasing, that's how I first saw it. But I really loved it. I thought it was great. But that was like, you know, when I had seen another Maurizio Merli film before, another like back years ago, like they No Shame Films put movies out on DVD, and he was like in one of them. I forget the name of that one, but that's when I first like was introduced to him. But in this movie, he plays Inspector Leonardo Tanzi, and he's clearly patterned after Clint Eastwood's Dirty Harry. Like, that's just like, you know, you can tell just from the beginning of the movie. And there's some great shots of the movie, like around Rome, great shots of Rome, like when at the very start of the film. When he's driving down the street. But like when it first starts out, like he's looking for a main criminal called Ferrander. And that's like, you know, and then I think he busts like a casino, like an underground casino thing going on, there's nobody there. The guy they're looking for isn't there. His name is Ferrander, but
It's kind of like they yeah. It's sort of that he keeps eluding them, and they just catch small fish here and there, and all their sources or the hints that they get, they don't pan out, and so they get frustrated.
And then he runs into another one of Ferrander's guys called Savelli, right? That's like one of his guys, and the Savelli is the one that like he kind of runs like the little gang of like bank robbers, and he's like the head of that group. But I guess his wife's brother is Moretto, the hunchback. So it's like some way they get him tied into it. But like, you know, meanwhile, you know, Tanzi is trying to break, you know, bring Ferrander in, but he can't find him no matter where he goes. And then what happens is Ferrander is sort of just like a, you know, like he's almost like not a MacGuffin, but he's sort of like, you know, just like the motivation for him to like, you know, go on this journey. But meanwhile, like what happens is all these other like people start coming into the picture, all these other like, you know, criminals and stuff. So we get kind of like off on another tangent, we go, you know, Tinsy starts busting like these two kids that like rob a girl. Like, remember they're the two kids on the scooter, they mm-hmm. like the first two kids that like show up and they rob this girl, take her stuff. And then Tinsy chases after them in his car. And there's like a cool, like chase sequence there. And then, you know, they're just two young punks like that, you know, they're just driving around, like, you know, robbing people. But then they end up like talking to Tansy's girlfriend, who's a psychiatrist. I think she's like a police psychiatrist or something. Anna.
Yeah, that's kind of where the movie gets a little bit political, because his girlfriend, as a, you know, criminal psychiatrist or whatever, she's part of that supposed part of the bureaucracy that is responsible for them having to let them go, you know, because there's always a reason why somebody gets.
Yeah. She believes like, you know, they're just like troubled youth or something, but it's just, you know, that's where Tansy's coming from. He doesn't believe that. Then we're introduced to Thomas Milian as the hunchback, and he's like, comes into the movie. He's like working at like a meat market or something like that. Like, you know,
he's a butcher.
Yeah. Butcher or something like that. And it's like, you know, it's just a great like introduction scene with him. But then
Tansy basically, what makes the where you kind of have a turn in the story is that Tansy ends up going too far and he gets suspended, and the mobsters, they know that he's the one who's after them, and then they threaten his girlfriend and send him a message basically,
and they bring her to the junkyard. That's the junkyard scene where they bring
her. And they kidnap her, and then, as you say, there's a bunch of side characters that appear, and one of them is a guy called, I think, Tony.
Yeah, Ivan Rasimov, is it?
Rasimov, yeah. One of the Rasimovs.
Yeah.
He has a sister. I forgot what her name is. Yeah. She doesn't go by... Rada Rasimov is also... She has an AKA title there also in Italian Westerns.
Yeah, I know him from The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward, that
Jalo. Exactly, yeah. Or even Honeymoon...
Hatchet for the Honeymoon.
Hatchet for the Honeymoon.
Yeah, exactly. He's in a lot of those challenges.
And so he plays this guy who has kidnapped a girl and put her on drugs or something. Right. And so Tansy rolls up. You know, he sort of puts the screws on this whole operation, but they're not sure where Farrender is or who Farrender is until I think at some point they learn that Farrender might have gone to Switzerland to go plastic surgery or whatever. So they're chasing after someone who they don't even know
what he looks like or anything, or like, you know,
at the same time the clock's ticking because they kidnapped his girlfriend. Yeah, so and so in the end he's so that you, as you mentioned, the there's like a huge bank robbery after he gets suspended, but then he's sort of saves the day and gets all the hostages off alive. And so he's back, and he gets his badge back, and he can go after the rest.
We didn't mention like one of the best scenes in the movie where Tansy finds Tony like in his apartment, and they have that chase out onto the roof, and they like, and then Tony knocks him down onto the, you know, to the tiles like of the roof, and he like almost slides off and like falls off to his death, but he like just hangs on like at the last moment and like crawls back up and chases him. But then I guess he loses him like in the, you know, Tony takes off and like he loses him there. But another thing I was going to bring up, like a little detail I thought was kind of funny, like just to show you like what these movies are like, or was the scene where the girl had a car trouble, and she was like, oh, can you help me? Some guy was like on a motorcycle. He's like, yeah, I'll help you. And he like gets up, just like beats the crap out of her, and like takes her bag and like tries to drive off. But I think Tansy shows up and like shoots him or something, right?
Yeah.
He hits him with the car. I just thought that was like, that's like one of those scenes that just like shows you what these types of movies are like. Like every guy like on a motorcycle, like always like grabs someone's bag and like drags the person like down the street. It's just,
yeah, that's such a, from today's perspective, it's such a weird look at what crime was.
Yeah, it's just everybody's like a criminal. Like,
kids on bicycles are like the most dangerous thing ever.
Yeah, and it's always like, and it's like there's always like in these movies, like I was listening to like Mike Malloy talk about it, and he's like, he's saying there's always like certain like things like in these certain scenes that happen in these movies. Like there's always a scene like in a junkyard. And like after you watch, like you're like, oh, yeah, I noticed that because I was watching that movie, The Italian Connection, the Fernando De Leo movie. And there's like an exact, almost exact same type of scene in this movie. Like we were talking about earlier with the girl in the junkyard. There's always like a scene like certain things. And there's always like a scene where the cop goes into like an arcade and like beats everybody up. Like you'll see that like a bunch of times or something.
So it's like, even Tanzi is playing pinball in one scene. He's playing, I think, pinball or whatever it's called.
Is he playing? I don't know.
He's playing and somebody approaches him.
Like... I guess so. But I remember him going into the arcade and like, you know, to get the rich kid and like, you know, like beating all the whole group of his friends up like that type of thing. That's like one of those things. But it's so funny because whenever like Tanzi shows up to like beat people up, he just like the sound effects are so loud. Like he like smacks people and it's like. Like, you know, it's like the loudest stuff and like, you know, he knees him in the nuts and like it's just he does like that's like what he does like every scene, like when he beats people up. It's just like so it's just crazy over the top stuff.
And here, too, it's like it's almost like obviously he's frustrated with due process and his superiors and stuff like
There's
that.
There's no due process with Inspector Tanzi. That's for
no,
sure.
No, he makes Dirty Harry look like Mr. Clayton. Yeah.
I was exactly going to say what you just said, but I wanted to get in all these little things about like, you know, like the poster and stuff. But you just said it. So you beat me on that.
But then as you mentioned it, it's almost like once. Yeah. After the scene of the bank robbery where he goes
the second
in
bank robbery isn't there there's two bank robberies
yeah one the one in, the one in the end where after yeah. where he basically the saves same the bank day robbery. And then he's like, so am I still suspended? And he's like, no,
I remember, go ahead,
I mean, you proved your point, you're like, you're better than due process.
And he's like in that scene, like he crawls in through the like the duct, like the air duct, like to get the guys and stuff. That was a cool little thing.
He takes one of the other guys who's a good marksman, and then they just go in and just kill everybody. The guys
out. And then that finally leads him to where the hunchback is. And it's like, and I guess it's like some type of like recycling thing, like clothes recycling. I don't know what it is. It's like what that stuff is. It's like big bundles of clothes or something where he's like his hideout. I don't know what, did you know what that was? I didn't get that, what that was. That place.
I didn't. If some it could have been, or maybe a huge laundromat.
Yeah, I guess so. It could have been that, I guess. But it was just like huge, big, like bundles of like clothes or something, or like, you know, just, but that's where he goes at the very end of the movie. And he's like, you know, they make like a, you know, like a, you know, like a, he gets his cash for whatever he's, this stuff he's selling, like drugs or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, and with so obviously we don't want to spoil the ending, but in the end, of course, he manages to get his, I think he manages to get his girlfriend out, but then I mean we have to remember that the whole thing started with them going after this guy Farrender, but there's a surprise waiting for them.
Twist at the very end, so we don't want to give it away or not.
No, I don't want to. Let's not give it away. But also, I mean, we can talk about the ending in more abstract terms, because I don't think it's. I mean, there's actually more downbeat endings in the genre, but this one is like okay. But
this one kind of like deliberate. It kind of gives you like the type of ending like where the, you know, that you want to get from these types of movies, where it's not like, you know, like a. It's not like a 70s, like a, you know, like a, like we were talking about on the other podcast, the new Hollywood ending. It's more of like a, you know, traditional, like, you know.
Yeah, but there's in the genre, in the Euro crime genre, there's plenty of those endings where it's like the good guys don't win. I mean, because that's the whole premise. The premise is that, you know, the
cops bad guys will always get away.
The bad guys will always get away. There's always a bureaucrat standing in the way of justice.
And, corruption always, like, you know, screws
if we
everything
only,
up.
If we had only let the cops loose and do their jobs, but no, we had to tie them up in red tape. That's kind of the usual trope of these movies.
So it never turns out exactly the way you want it to, but that's what makes these movies special because it's just they're not playing by the standard rules. That's why we like them. That's why, like we were talking about with the Dirty Harry comparison, it's they're doing everything like a little bit bigger and like more exaggerated, like in these types of movies, and that's what makes them stand apart from the other ones.
Even for those who are just getting into the genre, or those who are, you know, want to see more, I would say this one is not the best, but it's a pretty excellent one.
I think it's pretty good. But I would, like I was saying, I think it's a good, like if you were going to start out watching these movies, it would be a good representative of the genre itself. Like, you know, it might not be like the very best one, but like it's like, you know, if you were going to hand someone a movie and say, check this one out. If you like this style of movie, you check out more of them, that type of thing.
It has just the right
amount. It has a lot of the, you know. Yeah, that's a lot of the tropes of those movies.
Production value is actually a little bit.
Yeah, and actually, it's really, I was going to mention, it's really well directed by Umberto Lenzi. It's excellent direction, I thought.
It does have like a, it has like a pinch of humor in there. And,
yeah, there's just a little bit of everything, a little touch of
some
everything.
Some sleaze, but not too much sleaze. I mean, there's, let's be honest, there's sleazier ones.
Yeah, there is much more sleazier ones and more violent ones too. But you know, you'll get a taste of what the genre is if you watch this movie. And also,
and
like,
I
was just gonna say, like, in the, especially the new Blu-ray that's out. It's a perfect, beautiful Blu-ray with, like, you know, nice extras and stuff like that. So you can check it out, you know, get a little taste of the genre. You know, it's a good, you know, just to start out with, since it just came out from Grindhouse Releasing, we have to give them a little shout out too, because they always put out like really good, high quality stuff. So
it's a nice
release, I thought.
And what makes this movie also great is that it has a lot of energy. A lot of these movies, they, it might feel like they shoved a lot of stuff in there,
right?
But we have to remember that this is during a time where you had to deliver constant stuff on screen because
don't want to be bored.
People didn't want to be bored. They had to compete with television coming out, and so this was just making sure that people didn't get up and leave the cinema.
There's always something going on. Like, and that's the other thing about it. It's paced really well.
The soundtracks are also like
right, and the music and stuff is like kind of like always going. And you know, that's what was good about the movie. There's always something going on in the movie, which like it never stops. Like there's always some, you know, little scene like where someone's getting beat up or, you know, whatever, someone's getting shot or there's a car chase or, you know, punch up or beat down or, you know, whatever it is, shootouts or.
Yeah, and even
that's,
I mean,
what's good.
Aside from the entertainment factor, as we've mentioned earlier, there's this this thing that is almost the defining mark of the genre is that here again you see the cop is frustrated.
Right.
They have to constantly release their the people they catch on bail. And of course, you know, it's kind of the questionable message, but it's, you know, obviously as if you could lock up people without evidence and due process. But of course here, the cops are the good guys and they're frustrated with the law, but you know, they're supposed to be the ones enforcing the law.
Right. They just become kind of like, you know, judge, jury, and executioner type thing. That's like what all these movies are like, you know.
Bureaucracy / politics / the higher up. Something is portrayed as being a force that's holding them back, sort of, it's something that we see over and over again, and I think where we see it especially is after, you know, any like movie about terrorism after 9/11,
right?
It deals with the same thing, like how far can we go in torturing suspects or whatever, and how do
it's
we
like
balance
element of like revenge, like, and trying to get
how
these
much
movies.
Can we violate our own rules by you know, saving our society, whatever. And the Italians were kind of dealing with the same stuff in the 70s. It's like they were,
because all that stuff really was terrorism. It was like mafia terrorism.
Were just like drive-by kind of like shootings and bombings and whatever.
So all the directors were getting back at like the mafia guys by like making their, you know, cops like just as nasty as the mafia guys. Basically, they might not, you know, blown people up like with like, you know, explosives or something, but they were like, you know, just as like brutal to them and stuff when they would. There was no like, you know, there was no like interrogation stuff. Like even in the interrogation scene in this, like he's like beating the crap out of the hunchback. He's just like, you know, beating the crap out of him. And like, you know, it's just, you almost feel kind of bad for the guy. Cause when we see Thomas, you know, when we see the hunchback, he hasn't really done anything. Like, I think when we first see him, like, you know, when they bring him in, he didn't even do anything really. Right. He was like just working at his job or something. They just accused him of doing something, I think. I don't remember him even like, you know, shooting his gun or anything. I think he only shoots his gun once in the whole movie, right? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think he has a machine gun or whatever.
He only kills one person, I think, in the whole movie. Or
yeah,
remember
yeah,
that Tanzer guy
kills
like
a lot more.
But I mean, like he I guess he does. But it's just I'm saying like at the very beginning, like when they first bring him in, they don't really know like what he's done or anything. So. Anyway, I'm just saying that's what the type of cops are in these movies. They don't like take any. They just start beating you up basically the minute they accuse you of doing something.
Another one that's really excellent that is very similar in terms of the story is High Crime by Castellari.
Oh yeah, High Crime.
Franco Nero.
I don't think that's the one I haven't seen yet. I haven't seen
he's
that.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's very similar in that, you know, a lot of them are very similar. It's always.
I bet High Crime was probably like the movie that they used for the Tansy character, like they as a blueprint for his character. You know what I mean? Because I remember they were saying like since like Merlee was sort of like the second string Franco Nero, I think like, you know, they probably looked at like one of those movies and like kind of like based their, you know, this character like on that one. You know what I mean? That type of thing.
High Crime is from 73 and the Tough Ones is from 76.
So it's, you know, all,
that's plausible.
Right. So, I mean, that type of thing probably happened, but anyways, excellent movie. And it was followed up by a sequel with Tansy called The Cynic, The Rat and the Fist. And I saw that one. I thought it was pretty good, but I liked this one more. Yeah, I thought it was okay.
The Rat and the Fist has, I think, even more of the chase sequences and stuff like that.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. It's more, if I remember, it's more all over the place.
Yeah.
But I these movies always, they show you kind of the seedy underbelly of, I don't know, Milan or Rome or whatever they take place in.
Yeah. I really like the ones where it's not, because I've watched other ones too. Like I watched another one recently and it was like, I think it was Weapons of Death or something, but there's other ones where it's just like, there's like long stretches of like nothing happening. It's just like people talking and stuff. And there's really not a lot of like, I like the ones where it's like Tough Ones where it's just
some are more procedural. So they try to be more on,
I guess
the,
so. Yeah.
On the police procedural end and then some are more on the action end. And then some go like really deep into the sleaze. Like
I love like the action.
Cry of the Prostitute is like probably one of the sleaziest I've ever seen.
Right.
Oh my God.
We could also, like we were going to say, we were also going to give like a few other recommendations of movies that we like in the genre, if you wanted to do that.
Yeah. I already mentioned High Crime. Which ones can you remember?
My favorite ones the first ones that I saw that I loved the most were Fernando De Leo's movies. Those are my favorites of the whole genre, I think.
Like Il Boss, like, you know, or like whatever it's called.
Milano Calibro 9 is one of my favorites. Wipeout or Il Boss is the other title. The Italian Connection or La Mala Ordine is the other one.
Italian Connection.
And then Mr. Scarface, that's the other one I love the most.
Oh, yeah.
Those are like my favorites.
That's a good one.
Yeah, he made really the best in the genre, I think, Fernando De Leo. He's just because his stuff had all the things that I love about those movies. It had like the crazy violence. It had the like kind of like, you know, the dark humor and stuff going on. And like everything was like really like extreme, like in his movies. Like if you watch, you know what I'm trying to say? Like if you watch like this one, it's basically filled with all that types of stuff. All like, you know, car chases and, you know, people being beat up, blown up by like, you know, just crazy stuff. But I just really like those, but.
And there's one, I think, I don't even think I've seen it. It's called Convoy Busters.
Yeah,
I think
Convoy Busters. It's
with Merle.
Yeah, I have seen that. That's one of the first ones I saw. I think that might have been actually the first one I saw with him, because I remember No Shame Films released him years ago on DVD, and I think that's the one that I saw with him. But I can't remember because it's been so long since I watched the movie. But yeah, that's another good one.
But it has to be said that the genre has a lot to offer. Like there's many small ones in there. There's like the subgenre of like the youth delinquents,
young, gangs, violent, and dangerous or something.
Youth gangs covering like the city and violence and whatever. Or there's a kind of subgenre where it blends more into the mafia type movies, whereas some are not so much mafia. This one's not a mafia movie.
It's just like, it's just all just general crime. Like
then there's some that are stylistically the same, but they're more on the mafia end. It's more like conspiracies and mob bosses and stuff like that.
Right. I'm
and
trying to think like of like the other
little projects. Ones that are trying to bend genres. Like there's one with Yul Brynner where he goes to, I think, Turkey. Yeah.
Death Rage, is it?
Death Rage, exactly. Right. You know, that's almost like a little bit into like, I don't want to say James Bond movie, but it almost,
there's a little touch of like espionage and stuff.
Yeah, it's more like espionage. And so the show already, it tried to like branch out a little bit.
They really tried to cover everything, it seems like. They tried to kind of like add a little bit of all that type of stuff.
There's always a director who tried to go a little bit into a different route to set itself apart from whatever other movie was currently playing and stuff like that. And,
like a recent one I watched with Thomas Milian is Syndicate Sadists.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty good movie. He plays a character called Rambo, and I guess he had just read the book First Blood, so he's like, I want to play this guy called Rambo. So that was kind of I thought that was a good little movie, and Joseph Cotton was in that.
Oh yeah,
we know from the Hellbenders, that other movie we're going to talk about.
Isn't that the one that plays in San Francisco?
You're saying which one? The
Syndicate Sadists. There's one with either Joseph Cotton or some other guy. It actually plays in San Francisco.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
The genre has more than just 20. It's like there was not as many as there were spaghetti westerns, but there was, plenty of them.
Yeah, there's a good amount
even
of them.
Smaller ones, low budget ones. Right. There was a lot of, there's actually a lot that you can't get English translations of probably.
Right.
So there's really a lot to dive in. And one of the better starting points is that documentary Eurocrime.
Oh yeah, that's an excellent thing. Eurocrime.
Really
yeah, that's
so
a really
good. It gives you a really great overview, and you can just sit there with a notepad and write down all the titles and then go out into the Grindel Cinema database and look them up. And
interviews with all the most popular stars and stuff. And we didn't even really get into all the American stars that went over to Italy to star in those movies. Like Henry Silva is probably the one that I know the most. He was in a ton of them.
Yeah, he's a recurring face.
There's a ton of those movies.
And he's not always, sometimes he's playing baddies, but sometimes he was actually playing good guys.
He would play good guys, but he was excellent in those Fernando De Leo movies. But like John Saxon would be in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yul Brynner.
Richard Conte.
Yep. Joseph Cotton was in a few.
Joseph Cotton. Joseph Cotton was in one called Gangster 70, I think. That's actually pretty good.
Wasn't that sort of like a precursor to the Polizios too, or something like? There was
it's an early one. It's from the '60s, mid '60s. Yeah.
There was a few of those that sort of were precursors to the Polizio genre, and like Grand Slam. Remember that movie, that one with Edward G. Robinson and Klaus Kinski? That was a good. It was like a heist movie, but it was sort of like a. It was like a few of them that was sort of predated the Polizio movies. But yeah, those are all awesome, and I'm trying to think if there's any other ones I could recommend that there's a good amount on Blu-ray now, but I would definitely recommend.
You mentioned the Fernando De Leo.
Those are the ones I'd probably recommend to start with. If I had to pick just a bunch, just that box set would be the best.
And there's, I think, three box sets with this.
Yeah, is there? There's volume one,
video.
Those are the ones I would pick to start with. And then the tough ones, of course, or Brutal Justice.
Yeah, and then there's from Arrow, there's one that came out recently called Years of Lead. After that era. And that's also a nice collection of well-known and lesser-known ones, more or less.
And the one you just posted on the site, Violent Streets, that one with the Thomas Milian movies? I think, remember that one? That one from, I think that's from Severin, that one that just came out?
I watched one 2 days ago called oh my god, the titles that it's almost like with the spaghetti westerns, you have to
they're all over the place.
Good with the titles. It's also Silva and Milian. It's all in the Grindhouse Cinema database.
Almost Human? Almost Human?
It might have been Almost Human.
It's the one
it's not Almost Human. It's another one.
Yeah, that one's probably the most violent one I've seen. That's crazy. Thomas Milian is in that one, too. He plays a total lunatic. But I mean, I'd say this is one of my favorite genres, along with the spaghetti westerns and giallos and those ones of that time. I love those movies.
And it's just super entertaining. And,
I love crime films anyway.
They all have a serious message, but they're not preachy or anything. You could just watch them for fun.
Right.
And as I mentioned earlier, there's of course the more highbrow kind,
the Damiano ones, those.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just recently reviewed three of those for FuriousCinema.com, and they're available in the Cosa Nostra box by Radiance Films, and that is an absolute recommendation.
The Case is Closed, Forget It is one.
And How to Kill
Day of the Owl or something, was it?
Day of the Owl is amazing.
And that went by the name Mafia in America?
Exactly. And I was puzzled, but actually the book came out first, and the book was already called Mafia. So it's not like they found a simpler title for the movie. It's just they chose the same title that.
And what were those? Those were more politically the book based. Those were more like political themed films. They weren't really into action and stuff, or what?
not so much on the action side,
Yeah.
but more on the socio-cultural thing
Yeah.
about the mafia. You know, nobody
Yeah.
wants to talk, you know, the
Right.
power dynamics, the
Yeah.
role of the police or the state versus the entrenched interests, and you know, who's really the powerful force in Sicilian society and stuff like
Right.
that.
Yeah, that's
And
still
these
really
are
interesting.
like more like highbrow, but they're
But you get
so
like a good idea of like
absolutely
what it was, what
recommendation.
that was like in Italy back then. Like, you know, that whole the stuff was going on and the mafia and all that.
Right. And so you already mentioned that, you know, the Grindhouse releasing a Blu-ray of the Tough Ones, that, and that's probably the one that we both watched is a great
Reference.
great one to get. And I mentioned this to you a few weeks back that I have a funny anecdote when it comes to this
Yeah, I
Blu-ray.
thought. Yeah, I thought you already said it. Like when you were talking about the, I guess you were. I thought you were talk when you were talking about the French language thing. That was the other thing.
I
Maybe
have
this is something else. Okay.
even funnier
Okay.
anecdote.
Yeah. Okay.
So the first print run of this Blu-ray had a ballpoint pen in there,
Oh
and
yeah,
it's
the little bullet.
shaped it.
Yeah,
It's
the bullet.
exactly. It looks like a
I
bullet
had that.
casing.
Yeah, I
So
have it.
I don't have it anymore, and the
Oh
reason
really?
is the following. So I had a friend.
You ate it.
yeah, the dog ate
Yeah.
it.
Oh, really?
So I had a friend bring that Blu-ray over from the States for me, and that friend he put it in carry-on luggage,
Oh,
and
no.
he
Oh,
went to, I
shit.
think, Heathrow, and
Oh, my God.
obviously, so the fact is it's not a bullet, and everybody
It's
knows it's not a bullet,
right. It's a,
but I
yeah.
should have warned him probably. But
Right.
anyway, as you
So
know,
did it
these
create like an
TSA,
incident?
yeah, it was like a minor incident, and
Oh my
long
God.
story short, they
It's a
kept it.
bomb inside the bullet.
Yeah, it's like it's a ballpoint pen, but
Oh
as
my
you know,
God.
sometimes these folks, they
Right.
have to like demonstrate their little
That's
fiefdom
crazy.
power or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't have that pen because
Oh
it
damn.
looked like a bullet
It was
casing.
taken away at the airport
Yeah.
as evidence for
I still, you know, it
a
still happened.
potential
That's
crime.
the yeah, it was a crime there. It
That's
was
crazy.
a
Yeah,
dangerous
that's fun.
ballpoint pen.
Oh my God. Yeah, that was an awesome box set though. Like, you know, it was really,
Yes, the
it also
soundtrack
has the
CD in
soundtrack.
there.
Yeah, the
Yeah.
soundtrack and everything and
And a booklet, a
great
little
soundtrack.
liner notes. Has a audio commentary by aforementioned Mike Malloy. A
Yeah,
shout
that's
out
an
to
excellent
Mike.
commentary.
He's a cool
Lots of
guy.
good tidbits of information and, you know, like
Yeah.
a nice overview of like the genre. Like, you know, he just tells you all about that and excellent. And I think there's a new, is there, I think there's a new DVD he did the commentary for. Is it the New Godfathers or a new Blu-ray, I mean? I think it's
He's
the New
doing a lot of
Godfathers,
stuff. And
which
one
I haven't
other thing
seen.
that we should mention, probably because
Yeah.
there's people from all over the place listening, is that there's not just the Grindhouse releasing one, but there's a UK release from 88 Films, which is
Yeah.
similar but not identical.
Is it better or worse or?
I would have to refer people to the Grindhouse Cinema Database to
Yeah.
make that comparison, but I think there's
Yeah.
some differences
Like
in
extras
the
and stuff as far
extras,
as like,
yeah, but
yeah.
they're both excellent, and I think they're
Yeah.
both the 88 Films is licensing the print and the from Grindhouse Movies, so the transfer is the same
Yeah. Because
as far as I know.
it was funny. I was watching the one of the extras on the you know, on the Tough Ones Blu-ray, and it's actually one of them is one of the features featurettes is from No Shame Films, which is like, you know, one of the old the first, you know, first labels that put out like the Giallos and Polizios on like DVD, like way back, like when I first started getting into them. So that was kind of interesting to see. Because, you know, because
Yeah, I think
sometimes they'll
the
carry over certain like feature, you know what I mean? Certain extras and stuff.
so I just opened that page on the Grindhouse Cinema Database, and I think that so the 88 Films one has an additional audio commentary,
Oh,
and
who?
also I think the Grindhouse releasing one doesn't have that Brutal Justice version, and I think the 88 Films one has
Oh,
that.
it does. I wanted. I
Pretty
was kind
sure.
of hoping to see like the actual Brutal Justice version of like what it looked like, but I couldn't find it.
So
But
I
it
guess
does have the yeah.
at some point Grindhouse Releasing will probably do a reprint, and maybe then they will take over the extras from
Yeah,
88
I would like to
Films,
see
like a
that.
give
But
and take.
there's a little secret on the Grindhouse releasing Tough Ones. There's a little secret. You can watch the Assault with a Deadly Weapon version, like a little like trailer for it, which is like really weird. It's sort of like a they changed that. That was another thing I thought was strange was other than the title, they created this weird like death squad like of skeleton guys like of like the for the logo, you know, like for the poster of it, and it's just weird. And then they changed the actual all the names of the characters, like the and like on the Brutal Justice version, like, you know, Maurizio Merli became Mike Merli and Umberto Lenzi became Bert Lenzi. But on this Assault with a Deadly Weapon version, they actually changed it from like Maurizio Merli to Richard Holiday and like weird, like total, like it has nothing to do with like the names. Like,
it
and
could also be like, how can you sell the same movie twice?
Yeah, I guess they were doing it for that reason. But like, why? It's like, you know, who the hell is Richard Holiday? It's like they don't have any clue. And like, and the composer Franco Michelizzi became Paul Fox. It's like, what the fuck? Like, you know, like wonder where they come up with this. But I guess they're just trying all different ways to, you know, re-promote it or something. It's like, you know, but that's like classic grindhouse exploitation style. That's like what it is. That's what they would do back then.
Exactly.
You know, have like different like alternate versions and alternate titles and, you know.
And that's before the internet and before everything. So you would go.
We didn't know. Yeah, there was no internet. Like back in the old days, you'd be like, oh yeah, let's go see Brutal Justice. And then like the next year, oh, there's a good movie called Assault with a Deadly Weapon playing. And you go see the same movie twice with just a different.
And you're sitting in there like, wait a second,
I've seen this movie before. It's just re-edited differently.
And you're throwing beer can at the screen.
I know. And another, there's a rat ran by. And then also another thing was they re-edited the version, I think in Brutal Justice, they re-edited it with inserts around New York City. So it looked, instead of being Rome, it was all New York stuff. So like the opening, that's why I would want to see Brutal Justice, because maybe at the beginning, like they show him driving around New York City or something as opposed to Rome. I don't know. I have no idea, but that's
and
kind
were
of
these,
interesting.
Were these shot by the guy you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, Terry Levine of Aquarius, really, like just inserted like, you know, shots of, you know, like, you know, whatever it would be like, it'd be he had to like go into like a bar or something. It would be like a bar in New York or something, as opposed to Rome or something like that. Like they must have just re-edited a certain way. You know what I think they did was the opening scene in The Tough Ones, we see all the shots of Rome and stuff. Like, you know, just it's not, I don't know if it's him driving around, but it's just, you know, just a car driving down the streets of Rome. In Brutal Justice and the other one, they cut out that whole beginning. So basically it starts with the two kids robbing the girl and then he drives off and then they, you know, so they're inserting, you know, so you don't even know it's Rome. It could be New York or wherever, you know what I mean? So that's how they did it.
But New Yorkers will know.
Yeah, that's, I guess that's the difference, but I would like to see the Brutal Justice version just to compare it, but I'm pretty sure that's what they did with that. But anyways, that was the Tough One, the Brutal Justice movie, which we loved from, that played the Selwyn in July of 1978.
What do you know what some of the movies were that it was on double features with?
Yeah, well, it did play with The Soul of Bruce Lee or The Soul of Chiba, and that was playing on this day in July of 78. And then some other movies that were playing on the Deuce at that time were Star Wars and The Terronauts. I have never seen The Terronauts. I've seen Star Wars. At the Times Square, there was Devil Times 5 and Snuff. At the Apollo, there was Convoy and Night Moves. At the New Amsterdam, there was The Swarm and Bruce Lee's Super Dragon. That must have been a fun double feature. At Cine 42, there was The Executioner and Hands of Death. Now, I don't know if The Executioner is, that could be Massacre Mafia style, or it could be the Sonny Chiba. It probably was a Sonny Chiba movie. I think that's the one.
Yeah,
that
both one, the you know same I mean? Title. Right?
Yeah, because some of these had like the same titles, but since it was probably like a Kung Fu double feature, it was most likely the Sonny Chiba one. Then at the Harris Theater, there was The Evil and Eaten Alive. And that probably was the Toby Hooper Eaten Alive. I think that was like, you know, I think there was another movie that came out later on, like in the 80s, that was Eaten Alive, a cannibal movie. Then at the Anko Theater, there was Grease and Breaker Breaker. So that was like kind of like the types of movies that were playing at the grindhouses at that time, kind of like all different genres.
There's a lot of stuff you could do back then on a night out.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, and it was interesting because, like, you know, a lot of times there was like, you know, the most popular movie playing with like some other movie, like, you know, obviously like Convoy and Night Moves. That was like sort of an interesting combination.
Yeah, but Night Moves,
the trucker
great.
Movie, and like the. And I love Night Moves. That's one of my favorite, like neo noirs. That's an excellent movie with Gene Hackman.
Fantastic. Yeah.
But you know, so that's sort of like what was playing back then. A fun night out on the Deuce.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you can recreate it by just, you know, going to your Blu-ray shelf and picking two that, you know, really.
Let's watch Grease and Breaker Breaker. That's a fun.
Sometimes,
that would be fun.
Sometimes I do that. Sometimes I watch something. I'm like, okay, which other movie would that actor could play, I
with?
Play next? Like, do I do a Henry Silva double feature or Thomas Milian double feature?
That would be an awesome double feature.
Yeah.
I mean, I love all those, and I love like the mixing of the genres too. That's kind of fun. You know what I mean? You just have a.
Yeah, it just has to be some sort of connecting aspect. Doesn't have to be
right
at all. It could be the same.
The actor or something, director, or the, you know, or the actual genre it is or something.
Yeah. A movie location.
Yeah. The, where it was shot or something, whatever. Two New York movies or something.
Fantastic.
So I guess that will do it for this episode of 42nd Street Forever.
Yeah, we'll put together some show notes and put all the movies that we mentioned, put some links in there, make it easier to find. And
there's definitely plenty of information on the website, which we should always promote, because that's like really what the, you know, that's where all the information is, the real good information about all the genres and all the movies and stuff.
And that's where we look up most of the facts too. I mean, that's our prime source for information. And we'll put some notes for.
We're trying to update it all the time with new stuff, and you know.
Yeah. And you can do stuff like compare to different Blu-ray releases,
right,
and see.
And we have a lot of that's probably one of the things that we've done best on the site is the Blu-ray pages, because we have like all the different versions of all the from the different countries and stuff. And you know, there's a
bunch of Eurocrime movies coming out in France this year. Yeah. So for those listening who are based in France or Belgium or whatever, mm-hmm. have a look at the French releases, which oftentimes have the same transfers and similar.
Are you saying you're saying French releases of the Polizio movies?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And what what's the label of in France that does it? Is it Radiance or no?
No, the French are, I think it's Artus Films and two or three other labels. The Chat qui Fume, the cat that smokes, is another of the boutique labels.
And cat that smokes.
Artus Films is also pretty good at those.
Yeah. What's Radiant? What country is Radiance? Is that England?
It's UK. It's by Francesco, who used to be the production head at Arrow Films. So he founded his own company.
Oh, cool!
And all the Radiance films, I have to say, I've only seen like six or seven, but they're absolutely excellent. The quality is excellent.
Because you wrote reviews of them, so you must have really been impressed by them. I'm going to write a review of this.
All the ones that I've seen so far, I reviewed for Furious Cinema, and there's more. And he puts a lot of work in there. And for most of us who are familiar with what Arrow has done in the past, I mean, he took that dedication to the movies into founding his own label, and you can see that same attention to detail. I mean,
right.
That Franco Nero box of the Damiani movies. That's
a blank. And how many movies are in there? Three.
Yeah. It's the Day of the Owl. Case is closed. Forget it. And How to Kill a Judge.
Oh yeah. And I was just wondering, what were the Polizio ones that were there? Like, you know, the other Polizio ones that are out on Radiance. I didn't catch the.
There's not so many other Polizios out, I think.
I thought there were.
You can also get The Iron Prefect with Giuliano Cemma, which is an early mafia movie, which is also excellent.
Yeah. Did you ever get the Violent Streets box set or no?
I didn't
know that one.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, there's also like for those importing from Germany, there's also lots of Eurocrime movies you can get on German Blu-rays, but they're not always English friendly.
Yeah, right.
For licensing reasons, so either you understand German or Italian.
Yeah, the first ones I bought were from Raro Video. Those, you know, that because they're from that's actually from Italy, and that was like when I first got them. I got them. I had a region free player, so that's where I first saw like the Fernando De Leo ones. Then, like later on, they opened up a U.S. branch of the company. Now you can get them all on, you know, region A or whatever it's called.
And another fun fact, Raro, were a little bit. They were, I don't know, on a hiatus for a few years, and now they're back.
Yeah.
But also, I think they went into a deal with Radiance Films. So.
Oh, really? So they kind of like share the different stuff.
There may actually be some upcoming releases from Raro Video's catalog that,
like, you know, the Day of the Owl and all that. Yeah, could
the
be
Raro
like that,
Video
so.
Attention or quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So definitely, if you want some information about the movies, definitely check out our Polizio Tesci section and, like, you know, all those. And there's links to all the Blu-rays and all those movies. There's like a pretty good amount of Polizio movies on the site. So.
Yeah.
We'll
that was fun.
Do it again. Have another.
Yeah, we pick up a double feature. We pick out a double feature, a movie that played on the Deuce, and
I actually have one which it's like a double spaghetti western double feature. That might be fun one to do.
Yeah, so we could
maybe do that in the future or something.
Corbucci double feature.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to keep it like an actual like authentic what actually played like there, and I have like a double that was like a spaghetti western double from like 1970, I think, that we could do. So it's like, you know, and I haven't seen one of the movies, but one of the movies is one of my favorites. So that would be kind of, I think you're a fan of it too. So
yeah, we should also probably do, I mean, I'm not so good with all the Bruce Lee clones and stuff.
Yeah,
we
that's kind of tough.
Do find a Chop Sucky double feature that's
like Sonny Chiba or something. Or
yeah, Sonny Chiba would be great. Yeah, we should.
Or like that. Or like a classic, like the Chinese Boxer or something like that, or like Master of the Flying Guillotine or something. You know, one of those ones that we kind of already like are a fan of. Because I think like sometimes what happens is as much as we love the kung fu films, they're not ones that have like a ton of like real well-known actors in them. You know, they're, you know, probably well-known if you're into kung fu films, but it's kind of tough to like make references because there's just so many movies in the genre.
It's a mass market. Let's not kid ourselves.
And sometimes it's difficult to like, you know, as far as the action stuff goes, it's like to convey like how good it is. It's, I don't know. I love those movies though. I love talking about kung fu. I guess it just depends on what movie it is. Sometimes it's easier to like describe them better or something, or,
you gotta pick the right combo.
Yeah, the pick combo or the right, you know, the one. Like I could probably talk about Master of the Flying Guillotine all day long because I just, you know, there's so much stuff about it I love, and like I could, you know, you can go into all these different things in the movie.
Or the 36th Chamber of the Shaolin.
Yeah, something like that. One of those types, or Five Fingers of Death. Something with like a nice, good plot and like, you know, good.
Prodigal Son is great.
Something like that, or yeah. But we'll definitely do some more of these double features in the future, and it's been a lot of fun talking about them, like, you know, picking the movies out and stuff like that. And hopefully people that, you know, like the site and listen to the show, they're, you know, they're kind of inspired to watch the movies, or, you know, even if they're fans, just like, you know, just see that we're fans too, and that type of thing. So it's been fun talking to you. This is 42nd Street Forever. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.
See you at the Deuce.